The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
Right now in Fast, Elon Musk facing his shareholders. The annual meeting is underway. The stock, after roaring higher in Q1, now stuck in neutral. What can he do to get things revved up again? We'll debate that. Plus, Home Depot's fixer-upper of a quarter. The home improvement giant posting its biggest revenue miss in over 20 years. As do-it-yourselfers shelf big-ticket items, the retail ripple effect straight ahead. And later, Japan's big market milestone, Amazon's AI ambitions for shoppers, and the government looking to block a big biotech deal. I'm Melissa Lee. This is Fast Money. We're live at the Nasdaq Market Site in the heart of Times Square. On the desk tonight, Tim Seymour, Steve Grasso, Dan Nathan, and Guy Adami. And we begin with some signs of progress from today's White House meeting between President Biden and congressional leaders on the debt ceiling. Speaker McCarthy saying after the meeting that negotiators are still far apart, but a deal by the end of the week is, quote, possible. I guess that's good news. Our Eamon Javers joins us from Washington with the very latest. Eamon.
I guess it is good news, too, Melissa. You know, a little bit of optimism here from lawmakers as they came out of that meeting, talked to reporters on the North Lawn of the White House, suggesting that there was no deal in the room today as they met with the president of the United States. But there was some progress. I want to play for you a soundbite from Speaker McCarthy because he hit on something that I think might be key as this negotiation enters into its final phase. Take a listen.
What has changed in this meeting is the president changed the scope of who's all negotiating. Appoint somebody from the president's team who can work with the speaker's team to see if we could come to an agreement. That is what the decision was made in this meeting. So the structure of how we negotiate has improved.
So the Speaker of the House there suggesting that the structure of this negotiation is what changed. There's going to be a key point person on each side who's going to run it on a staff level. That's different. That might indicate that there's actually some stuff to talk about, and that might indicate that there's some progress about to be made. Remember, the X date is June 1st. That's not for a while yet. We still have to do a lot of brinksmanship getting up to the end of that. But it does give you a sense that there's a formal negotiating structure in place behind the scenes, as you just heard the Speaker say. We also heard from Chuck Schumer, the Democratic leader in the Senate. He also talked about some of the things that made him optimistic today.
What gave me the most hope, and there were a bunch of things, is that everyone, including the Speaker, agreed we need to be bipartisan. The idea of having a partisan bill we knew would get us nowhere, and everyone freely admitted that.
So, Melissa, that might be as optimistic as you can be without an actual deal on the table here. One more interesting behind-the-scenes tidbit on the negotiations. We did hear from the White House today that the president is going to cut his Asia trip short after the G7 on Sunday. He's going to return to Washington to be here on Monday for the final week and a half or so of the negotiations as they really get down to brass tacks next week. So a burst of optimism, a rare thing here in Washington, Melissa. Back over to you.
Yep. Eamon, thank you. Eamon Javers, I feel like Washington has a different definition of optimism than normal people because to improve the negotiating structure, the fact that President Biden is coming back from an overseas trip, I feel like these things, they need to be bipartisan. These are things that we all knew had to happen in order for any deal to come together.
I'm not surprised. I think it's nice that the president's not going to Papua New Guinea and he wants to kind of come home and sign a deal. So, but I'll say this again, straight out of central casting on both sides.
Yeah.
I'm optimistic, actually.
Are you more optimistic on this optimism?
I can only be more optimistic. But no, I am. The fact that he's cutting his trip short, I think it's a good sign. When Chuck Schumer uses language like that, he's probably trying to be somewhat tempered, so he's probably more enthusiastic than he is. And I'll say this, the gold market today appears as though something's going to get done as well. Gold sort off in a pretty precipitous way. Now, with that said, you saw the late sell-off in the S&P and the HYG, which is interesting and sort of counter to what I just said. But, yeah, I'm a little more optimistic having heard that.
I think both sides live and die by polls. So the American population is getting tired of hearing about this debt ceiling debate. But when you look at it, why would we ever have had a debt ceiling issue anyway? They could always kick it down the road till September 30th. So there should never be a default. That's off the table. Are there crazy people on both sides? Yes. Is this going to happen on right now? I don't think so. I think the worst case scenario is they sign it for September 30th, kick the can down the road, and nothing happens. Crisis averted. Everyone back to normal.
Yeah, it's really hard, though, to kind of see what the market's pricing, because it doesn't seem like it's pricing a whole heck of a lot. And I just go back to small caps. And I think about this as if there was like something that doesn't kick the can down the road, even if it's to September 30th, you know, any drawn out situation, any increased volatility, anything that actually makes consumers like think twice about spending or businesses think twice about CapEx and those sorts of things, that is just a surety. One thing that we are all debating is like, is there going to be a recession? How long will it be if it happens? This would put us in a recession, and, you know, like very quickly if there was like some sort of prolonged situation that resulted in some sort of near term default or the government, you know, inability to pay their bills. You know, the market's not pricing anything. The only thing that appears to be pricing is small caps. Stocks, some sort of disruption or a slowdown in the economy.
I think if you look at the VIX, the market isn't pricing anything. If you ask me if our equity market's pricing in a default, I'd say no. But I then look also at the breakout of mega cap tech stocks and where we are in cash levels. That Bank of America Fund Manager survey, we've had the biggest move into tech stocks since 2009 over the last 2 months. That's a market that's defensive. There's no question about it. And so the VIX headlines, we've talked about it, these VIX geeks need to break it down nicely. You are a VIX geek. Yeah. That's a compliment. And I, you know, there are reasons why volatility is so low, but there's no question that the stock market is not pricing in disaster. And I think that's something that I think is probably appropriate, but the market is pricing in recession is pricing in lower.
Sorry. If we were going to default, if that was really on the table, then you have to start investing. You sell the dollar and you invest international. But I don't think that's going to happen. So you could see the reverse of that. You could see people buying the dollar-denominated assets, obviously risk on once again. But if we get close to that hiccup, then you want to be getting out of the dollar because everyone else will be doing the same.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in the meantime, right, big cap tech is almost like the new staples, mm-hmm. the new utilities in this sort of market.
Money market.
So, right, exactly. So the fact that we've seen flows over the past couple of months, and we continue to see big cap tech and the big cap stocks really do all of the work in the markets, Guy, this really tells you that, to Tim's point, it is a defensive market. We are pricing something in. We're not pricing it in a conventional way. We're pricing it for this reality, which is at the flight to these big cap tech stocks.
All great companies, but again, is that a healthy sign for the broader market? We can debate it whether or not these other companies will start to play catch up at some point. But the fact that these have been defensive and valuations have gone up along with it, we talk about it all the time. I'm not suggesting that I'm right, but all the moves in a Microsoft, to a certain extent in Apple, all multiple expansion, which is fine. I mean, that can continue for a period of time until it doesn't, and then things catch up. I mean, the last couple quarters for those companies, by their own standards, were not particularly good. The stock reactions have been remarkable.
Yeah, the concentration is about as bad as it can get right now, and I'll tell you why. If you look at energy, you look at financials, you look at small caps, we just mentioned, look at other parts of the economy, you know, that are very cyclical of this market, and they're saying something very different than five stocks that make up nearly 50% of the NASDAQ 100. And so when you think about all of the risk of the entire stock market has been transformed to these five stocks at a time where plenty of other sectors are telling you there are problems out there, or at least they're pricing in a slowdown in the economy.
But when you have a market cap weighted index, you're going to get that. I agree, it's expanded dramatically, but usually you have 20% of the market in those top 5 to 10 names. Now it's 30%.
But you understand what I'm saying is, but all of the concentration,
it's market cap related.
No, I understand, but so
you guys need to understand each other.
Yes. No, but if but all of the risk,
and
though,
when someone says, do you understand?
split it up.
You have to say, yes, I do.
Up,
I think I would.
Yeah,
that's what I would do right now.
Well,
go ahead.
All right. Go, Dan, please.
No. I'm just saying, it's about as acute as it's been in a long time.
Yes.
In five names at a time where we have so many headphones. That's my point.
Okay.
They did
agree.
It. Look,
I think we agree on all of it. Okay,
producing,
let's move on.
But they split them up.
Now,
we got to stay here.
Now, no, we don't. Now to the other big story of the day, Tesla's annual investor meeting. It's underway right now. The stock is racing higher earlier this year, but now Tesla's spinning its wheels, shares dropping nearly 18% over the past 3 months. Beyond the meeting, we are also counting down to the huge Elon Musk exclusive one-on-one with our own David Faber. CNBC's Phil LeBeau's got the latest developments from this meeting today. Phil.
Melissa, they have just started the Q&A session of the annual meeting, which is always interesting because that's probably where you get Elon Musk, where he is the most off the cuff, if you will. In fact, somebody just asked him point blank, how are you doing? You've had a lot happening in the last year. And he said, yeah, it's been a little rough. had to do some open heart surgery on Twitter, but I feel good with Linda Yaccarino taking over there. That was a comment from just a few minutes ago. Two pieces of news have been made by Elon Musk this afternoon. One of them with regard to his view of the economy and where it's at, where it's headed, and how long until he sees things improving. He's not real optimistic near term. Here's Musk talking about the next 12 months.
I expect things to be, just at a macroeconomic level, difficult for at least the next 12 months. Tesla will get through it and we'll do well, and I think we'll see a lot of companies actually go bankrupt.
That's Elon Musk talking about the economy and what he expects over the next 12 months. He says he believes that Tesla shareholders will be better off, let's say 12 months to 18 months down the road, once they come through this patch that he expects for the entire economy. With regard to Tesla specifically, he did say that the company is planning a couple of new products. So there's some news there. Here's Musk talking about what they're planning.
Two new products that I think you will be very excited about. And both the design of the products and the manufacturing techniques are head and shoulders above anything else that is present in industry.
He did not put a volume on those two new products, but he was extremely bullish in saying they will be big sellers, in his opinion, for Tesla at some point in the future. Melissa, we don't know what those products are. He said there will be a proper unveiling, if you will, at some point down the road. I'm almost positive one of them is going to be a lower priced car, probably something that they can sell in that $25,000 to $30,000 range, if not a little bit lower. Likely will be built at the Giga Mexico, which is being built in northern Mexico right now. As for the other vehicle, there has been speculation that we might see a more full size SUV, a traditional looking SUV at some point. But that's Elon so far talking about what he expects. And like everybody, Melissa, we're looking forward to this interview with David Faber coming up at the top of the hour.
We are. Thank you, Phil. Phil Lebeau, who is, by the way, in-house here at the NASDAQ Market Site. Again, 6 p.m., that one-on-one David Faber with Elon Musk. Two new products, particularly when we're talking about a more affordable product. Isn't that the holy grail here, to get a Tesla car into the hands of everybody?
Wasn't that the Model 3? Wasn't that supposed to be the car for the masses?
I mean, for the masses, but 25 to 30 could be emerging markets. Mr. Emerging Markets.
It could be. And this was a classic Elon headline. Very vague, very pronounced and very dramatic. And you know, I think it's exciting to think about that. I think the dynamics around the company right now are really people, you know, they're on both sides of this. Where's demand? And again, is this production at any cost and at any margin the right strategy? And I'm sure we're going to hear a lot about that.
Margins, that's exactly. What does it mean for margins? They talked about it in the fall, they being Tesla, that their margins were coming down, but they wouldn't reach the levels that the Fords and the GMs were. I think 16%, something like that number. I think they're below 20% or right around 20%, which I think alarm bells go off when we get south of that. And they're trending down to those levels. And this is interesting. I'm not trying to parse every word, but after he said roughly 12 months, the global economy will be better. So anyone who is a long-term investor in Tesla will do extremely well.
Right.
What happens in the short term, though? I mean, the stock has not traded particularly well for over a year. That bounce over 100% notwithstanding. I mean, there's still $165 stock, significantly lower than its all-time high. So at this level, I mean, this is really the level of support. We start breaking down here meaningfully, and you're probably looking at that 110 level again.
Yeah, but I was just going to say, I mean, they're really wrong about one thing. They thought that there was going to be this elasticity if they reduced the price of these cars, and what happened is it just destroyed profitability. We saw that, okay, with the margin decline. It was much worse than people expected. That's even with the IRA,
credits.
You know, credits, that sort of thing. So, I mean, if demand really does fall off and there is a big price war, and your point about the Model 2, this really lower end than the Model 3, they're having huge competition issues in places like China, in emerging markets right now. So to me,
but all of Latin America.
Okay, fine.
It's manufacturing there.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, like, right now, I mean, like, it, China is the growth engine, right? And so, like, that would take a couple years to get ramped up, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Long-term, you said long-term. Anyway, let's bring in Tesla Bull, Gene Munster, managing partner at Deepwater Asset Management. Gene, great to have you with us. How excited are you, if at all, about this, you know, Tesla Model 2 or whatever you want to call it, this lowest-end car that could be unveiled soon?
Scale 1 to 10, 9.5. This is a measurable outcome, a measurable development. We knew it's coming. We don't know the timing of it, but just to kind of put the context of the conversation, and ultimately this is about selling units. It's about deliveries. And to increase deliveries, you need to increase your product line. They really have two products right now, Model Y, Model 3. They announced today that Model Y is the best-selling non-pickup truck in the U.S. Non-pickup truck means pickups sell more than the Model Y. That's the F-150. And I think there's an opportunity for Tesla. If you just take the step back here, Cybertruck's going to be coming out next year. That could be a nothing. It could be a grand slam. And then you put on that a lower priced vehicle that you're talking about. And then there's this other vehicle. I'm going to guess that it's probably something like a kind of a van, a Sprinter like a Mercedes Sprinter like type of vehicle. Smaller market than the Model Y, but still kind of fills in this product gap. And they don't update their products very often. They're very different than a typical car maker. So I'm optimistic about the long term here based on what's going to be more models coming out. And it's, yes, we're in a storm around the economy right now. But as soon as these products start coming out, I suspect investor optimism related to Tesla is going to shift to more being more positive.
Gene, hold on. I want to get to Phil LeBeau again. He's got some more details from the meeting. Phil.
It just came out a couple of minutes ago, Melissa. A question from one of the shareholders was, basically, why don't you do advertising? If you did advertising, you might be able to reach a larger audience and advance sales and advance the development of electric vehicles. Elon Musk kind of talked about it. He said, yeah, maybe. He goes, hey, I'm open to ideas. We will try advertising. We'll give it a shot. Now, does that mean that we expect a full campaign that you would see from a traditional automaker? I don't think so. But it is significant, Melissa, because they have never done any type of advertising. Let's see if this is just a comment that is made at an annual meeting or if there's follow-through here and we actually do see some form of advertising for Teslas over the next couple of years.
Sounds like a comment made by the owner of Twitter, which relies on advertising. Phil, thank you. Phil LeBeau, for keeping us posted. Gene, back to this here. Should we think about Tesla now as growth at all costs? I mean, is that the right sort of way that we're looking at it? Because that's what it sounds like, that whatever products they have, they don't really care about the profitability. They don't care about the margin. They want to get the units out there. That's what you made it sound like, too.
Yeah, I think Dan was mentioning that earlier on. I agree with that. I think that this is growth at all costs. This is not just an EV story. It's not just a Model 3 and Y. We talked about the other two products that are coming out. They led their investor commentary today to talk about Master Plan 3. There's going to be HVAC. That's a new product. Obviously, FSD, more solar products. And then he said optimist, and this is the kind of the, I guess, the eye-rolling comment. I think the head of the eye-rolling comment is that long-term optimists will create more value, be more of the valuation of Tesla. Obviously, this is this robotic that is just in its infancy right now. But all those, when you put this whole piece together, what this is, it's growth. I mean, each of these products are going after big addressable markets. And I would just put that up against, and when the debate about investing in this is that put that lineup, even if two or three of those hit, put that lineup against any other car makers, and I think that Tesla still stands above the rest when it comes to growth opportunities. It's going to be bumpy, but they're going after such big markets, and they got such a good lead. I suspect that the momentum is going to shift more positively in the quarters ahead.
Gene, do you think the market has become too fixated on that margin of 20% because they're so far ahead of the competition? Do you think that's where we should be fixated on the fact that even if it drops to 15%, they're still going to be way ahead of the other car makers? I think I know your answer, but why do you think the market attached itself to 20?
Markets typically looks 2-3 years out. In the case of Tesla, it's been looking the one quarter, two quarters out, focused on that number. If that number goes down, let's say it goes at 15% number, the stock's going to go down. I'm going to be wrong in the near term. But I think that eventually, I think what really separates, and this is what we do at Deepwater, is look for persistent growth. These are companies that grow longer for faster. And I think what really the opportunity around Tesla is to lean into whatever the margin is, if it's 8%, if it's 2%. Mm-hmm. But if they start capturing some of these markets, they are large, and large is an understatement. And I think that eventually the profitability is going to swing back. And they've shown they can do that in electric vehicles. I think they can do it in energy capture. And eventually, long shot here, but eventually around Optimus and robotics.
Gene, thanks. We'll check back with you.
Thank you.
The shareholder meeting, of course, still underway, and we'll keep you posted on any developments. Meantime, coming up, spending slowdown. Home Depot delivering a weak outlook as consumers pull back, so could Target and other retailers follow? We got the details straight ahead. Plus, some overseas outperformance. Japanese stocks continuing to rally and hitting their highest levels in 33 years. Can the climb continue? We'll debate that when Fast Money returns.
The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura's been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Home Depot dropping today after delivering its worst revenue miss in 20 years. The home improvement retailer also saying even high-income homeowners are cutting back on spending. That warning sending Williams-Sonoma and RH shares lower today. Two retailers catering to the higher-end home goods shopper. Target reports before the bell tomorrow, and it might be in an even tougher spot than Home Depot. The retailer is highly reliant on discretionary spending. Only 21% of its revenues come from groceries. What should we glean from this other than something that we've been saying for a long time, and that is there has been a tremendous pull forward when it comes to these discretionary items, particularly for the home during the pandemic? How many oven mitts and pillows do you need in your house, Scott?
Well,
are you buying oven mitts at Home Depot, by the way? That explains a lot.
No, but man, for like Williams-Sonoma and RH and the higher-end consumer that's buying fancy
take as
home
many
things.
Of their oven mitts as they have to sell me. That's a great-looking oven mitt.
You get the small ones.
Nice. Got it, baby. All right.
I'm sorry.
You can't even talk. Okay,
I'll take it from here. So I think in Home Depot's case, no one's had a sweeter spot than Home Depot's had. And if you think about it, again, there's been lumber deflation. So as we're speaking about small mitts, I mean, I think this is something else that I think Home Depot is suffering from. They were in the perfect space for 2 years. And I actually don't think these numbers are that bad. If you look at their gross margin, it's still above a 2019 level. Should you be out rushing to buy Home Depot here? No. Was that guide disappointing? Is this shocking for Home Depot? But this is hardly, run for the doors. And in fact, their pro business is part of the reason why they're very resilient, because there still are a lot of contractors out there filling a lot of orders. But, you know, it's a sign of the times. They're never going to see that again. Home Depot will never see. And that includes their margin profile. That was it.
I've composed myself.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I thought the stock actually traded okay today on what wound up being a pretty lousy overall tape. I mean, the stock was down $4. 275 was still a support level we talked about. It should have been worse. The restoration hardware move was really bad.
Yeah.
I mean, they took that out to the woodshed. And that is just, you know, on valuation, it's actually cheaper than Home Depot. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think HD traded particularly bad today. Traded a few times normal volume. If you for a trade, I think you could be long the stock.
Anything that you're going to need a second mortgage to buy, anything that's related on interest rates. When you go to Home Depot, people are putting extensions on their house. They're doing new bathrooms. They're doing new kitchens. If it's a sectional couch, yes, you probably have to finance that too. But you have to be a little more cautious. If it's a high-end product, people who have money might curtail it a little bit, but they're still going to spend it. If you need a second mortgage to buy it, stay away from those
stocks.
So
you're saying you'd rather be in Home Depot even if there's a pullback in spending?
I think Home Depot, I could see those people pulling back because they have to actually take out a loan. So anything that needs a loan, but if you're talking about high-end clothing, I think you could still be there.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, Guy just said he's surprised how well it traded today. I mean, this stock, you know, trades at a market multiple. And I think we can all agree on this desk that we don't think the multiple assigned to the broad market right now is appropriate, given how fast interest rates have come and what we're starting to see is sort of the data from the economy. When you hear a company like this, I think you said, Mel, it was like the worst revenue miss in 20 years. These are not one quarter sort of things, you know? And so here's a company that's dealing with a hangover from the pandemic. They really benefited from a lot of the dynamics that were going on in the housing market and low rates and all that sort of stuff. And then we think about, again, the conversation we were having at the top of the, you were talking about margin expansion and some of these new staples now, like the biggest companies on the planet who have all of these moats, and now they're trading at like 30 times or whatever. So to me, there needs to be some sort of like, we need to see this kind of spread narrow a little bit. And to me, it's just getting further widened right now.
Home Depot or Target, Tim?
Home Depot. Yeah, I mean, I think you've had a pullback here. Let's see where it goes over the next couple of days. I agree, this doesn't turn around overnight, but I'm still going to get, you know, mask and tape and drop cloths and fertilizer and
sure you are.
And Spectracide and, you know, that's what I do.
A lot more fast money to come. Here's what's coming up next.
Japanese stocks jumping, soaring to a 33-year high. But can the overseas outperformance keep on rolling? The traders break it down next. Plus, artificial acceleration. Amazon, the latest company to get in on the AI surge. But does this kind of feel like a backtothefuture.com moment? We'll debate. You're watching Fast Money, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Japanese stocks continuing to climb, the broad-based TOPIX index jumping 0.5% in Tuesday's session to reach its highest level since August 1990. That brings the index's gains this quarter to 6%. Japan's other major index, the Nikkei, gaining nearly 6.5% in the same period, sitting at highs not seen since November of 2021. Both of those indices outpacing major averages in the U.S., with the S&P 500 nearly flat since April. Tim, this is a major milestone for Japanese stocks.
It is, and we can look back and say they're still not above that, you know, that blow-off top from the late 80s, but it's been extraordinary. The Japanese market has seen greater payout levels, has seen greater free cash flow of their companies, and if you look at, you know, Toyota, Sony, Hitachi, Sumitomo, Mitsubishi, and if you look at their banks, they traded about half the price to tangible book as U.S. banks. I'll just say this about international everywhere. You look at the DAX, it's within a whisper of all-time highs here. If you look at the FTSE, it is at all-time highs, effectively. People are betting, and again, I would go back to that Bank of America fund manager survey, they're betting on a weaker dollar. A weak dollar is a very crowded trade. Long European equities is a very crowded trade. I advise on an international ETF called IDEVO, and what you see is people want to find the most cash flow generative stalwart balance sheet companies around the world that actually will benefit when China kicks it up in high gear.
Yeah, part of it is it's the not China trade, right?
Right.
It doesn't have that geopolitical risk. Then there's also the Buffett factor.
100%. Without question, that he shined a light without question on all those brokers out there. I think he owns five or six of them, but he put it on the map. Now more people are focused on it. You're starting to see money flows there. And you're right, the EWJ that Steve talks about, it's not breaking out necessarily, but it still has room probably to 71 or so, which is levels we saw a couple of years ago. So this is an interesting place to be for sure.
We haven't seen inflation in Japan in forever. And now you started to see it in the last couple of months. So they're the real canary in the coal mine. You want to watch what's going on in Japan. But I think it has a lot more to do with what you said, that people want to be exposed to that area, don't want to be exposed to China. And they use that as a replacement theory for buying stocks in that area.
Coming up, primed for an AI boost, Amazon jumping on plans to add a chatbot search feature. Just the latest company to get on the AI surge. ARK Invest chief futurist Brett Winton joins us next to lay out what is next for this space. And according to him, there's still a lot more to come. That interview is next. And we're just 30 minutes away from David Faber's exclusive interview with Elon Musk, fresh off of Tesla's annual investor day. We'll have special coverage at the top of the hour. Meantime, we're back in two. News on Elon Musk from Elon Musk. Phil LeBeau's been listening in on that conference call. Phil.
Melissa, a few final questions from shareholders. One of them was point blank saying, hey, there's lots of rumors out there that you are going to step down as CEO of Tesla. Is that true? Elon said, no, he is not planning on stepping down. He plans on remaining CEO of Tesla. And then unprovoked, he said why, which is he believes that the development of artificial intelligence, AI, needs to be done responsibly and needs to be incorporated into future products at Tesla and elsewhere responsibly. And he said, I got to stick around and make sure that happens. So that question has been floating out there, Melissa, for some time. Would he possibly say at some point, I've had enough. I'm going to move into a different role. He says, no, that's not happening.
All right, Phil, interesting that the stock is not really reacting too much right now on that headline. Phil LeBeau, up 0.7% right now. After hour session highs, but still not really much of a move. I don't know. What do you think? I would have thought it might have seen a bigger pop.
Well, to the extent that this is a guy that is a cult of personality CEO and he's somebody that's reaffirmed he's going to be at the helm, we've gotten the news on Twitter over the last week or so. I mean, I don't think there's any surprise here. I mean, he's pretty much let people know I'm here and I'm focused.
All right. Meantime, Amazon shares climbing almost 2% today on reports it is planning to add generative AI to its search feature. Amazon now the latest big tech company to move into AI search following Microsoft and Alphabet. All three stocks up over the past week. So is the AI hype warranted? Dan, what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, not near term. I mean, this is a company that's been using machine learning, deep learning, all those phrases before we started saying AI for like probably over a decade. If you think about the recommendation engine that they've been using, that was some of the secret sauce about the growth of their e-commerce and then just search relevancy and, you know, search and advertising become a huge business for them, over $30 billion a year. And then you think about how they're using all of those technologies as it relates across AWS and all the services they provide there, their logistics. So the fact that this stock turned around after they gave guidance, okay, remember that 10%, and now it's rallied 10%. This is part of what I'm saying. When I say this is a bubble, it's a near-term bubble that is not particularly warranted across multiple stocks. This is Exhibit A here. So to me, I mean, this doesn't make a whole heck of a lot. Amazon's a great company, and they've been doing the right things for a long period of time, but right now it seems a bit of a hype.
For more on this, let's bring in ARK Invest chief futurist Brett Winton. Fast Money's favorite futurist. Brett, great to have you with us.
Great to be there.
The only one we know, actually. just to be clear, for Amazon, when we think about what Amazon does already, I mean, it knows what books I want to read. It knows, you know, what food I like to eat, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, on some levels, isn't AI already being implemented? What is the difference between what Amazon is doing now with what they will employ?
Well, I think that this is more speaks to how Amazon's front-end experience is broken and perhaps profoundly broken because of the way they incorporate kind of third-party products onto their platform. I think Amazon's platform, it has a lot of legacy debt to how the business has evolved. And so it's natural that they try to apply new language models to helping user discovery. I think through their smart speaker networks, that's maybe been a more promising way they can deliver users to products that they want to buy. And every company is going to have to adapt to AI. It's funny, Dan, to hear you talking about, this is hype or a near-term hype cycle. Our belief is that there's going to be upwards of $90 trillion that accrues to the enterprise value of AI software companies, broadly speaking. And to give you a sense of that scale, the current equity markets are on the order of $100 trillion. So there's a huge business value opportunity that's going to be kind of accommodated over the course of this business cycle. Now, is Amazon, because it announces a large language model at its front end, going to take advantage of that? Probably not. It's actually, you know, maybe a legacy infrastructure that they have that they need to upgrade to stay competitive with nimble competitors.
$90 trillion, but how much is destroyed, Brett, on the other side of it? I mean, I'm just curious because on the face of it, it sounds like an amazing thing that Amazon's going to be doing this. But at the same time, if you think about how Amazon is working right now, when you search for something, you know, the knock on Amazon in recent years is that it delivers a lot of sponsored content, products you may not necessarily want, but they pay for the advertising. How does that work when you're doing generative AI? Do we know enough yet to know that this will be as profitable for Amazon as its current business model?
I mean, the short answer is no, we don't. And that's part of the reason why I'm surprised that the shares rally on the news, because they do have an advertising business and companies are basically merchants jockeying to appear higher on their search rankings and using a large language model to deliver end users to products could break that and perhaps profoundly. Google faces the exact same dilemma. I think the it's interesting to me that these large, you know, mega cap tech companies have rallied over the course of the last few months, when it seems to me that the likely output of AI is to enable their smaller and more nimble competitors to nibble at their heels while they use these technologies to try to beat each other over the head. And so it's not clear to me that it accrues to any of the mega cap tech companies' benefit, despite what the market seems to be embedding.
Brett, so that's my question. Why this announcement from Amazon today? I mean, this doesn't make a lot of sense to me, and I kind of agree with what you're saying. We certainly argued cynically that AI is something that's already, like, Amazon didn't just start investing here. Google, you know, why are they doing? Is this as simple as just understanding kind of what moves stocks, or is there more going on here?
I mean, sometimes it could be that the leadership team believes that their employees are not moving quickly enough to deploy technology. And so it's a way to prod the internal employee base that this is something we need to take seriously. And we know it's going to disrupt existing business lines. And we as an organization need to move more quickly. You know, I can't speak to exactly why, you know, Amazon announces this now. I can say that across the board, enterprises are taking up AI very quickly because they see very clear ROI cases. And it's not just in these big tech companies that it's happening. This is accelerating every technology across every sector. And I think business leaders or savvy business leaders know they need to move quickly because or else they're going to fall behind because of the rapidity of the pace of change here.
It sounds like, Brett, that what you're saying is that if you want to play AI, if you want to invest in AI, investing in the five biggest technology companies in the United States, that's not the way to go right now.
Yeah, I think it actually imperils each of their business models is imperiled by it in a unique way. Apple has privacy issues that prevents it from taking data from users. Google has their entire search franchise that's potentially put at risk. Google's using it to try to wound Microsoft and its Office 365 product. And here, Amazon AI, if anything, is likely to empower a lot of independent merchants to operate outside of Amazon's platform and eat away at the logistics advantage they have in low-cost delivery by enabling drone delivery from outside vendors and really producing point-to-point mobility for people. In the meantime, you just mentioned Tesla and Elon Musk. Hey, you know, Tesla has the largest deployed fleet of robots in the world. If you look at Amazon's robot fleet for its distribution centers, they have roughly 3,000 robots per employee. Tesla, if you look at their vehicles, they have 300,000 per employee in terms of deployed robots. And so I think that there's interesting and other ways to play this.
Brett, thanks for your time. Appreciate it. Brett Winton of ARK Invest. Dan?
I think we're on the same page. And when we look at that ARK Innovation ETF, so if the best way is not to play these large platform companies, there's a bunch of garbage in there. There's like a bunch of stuff that's down on average, like 75% from their all-time highs. And they were all deemed to be innovative technology companies a couple years ago. And I would assume that some of this tech would really help those names, kind of getting them towards that $90 trillion in value.
Coming up, Musk CTV. We're counting down to David Faber's exclusive interview with Elon Musk right here on CNBC at the top of the hour. This is the live look at Tesla headquarters. This is where it will happen. The crew is all set. We're now just awaiting David and Musk to show. But first, it's biotech blues for two healthcare stocks as the Federal Trade Commission tries to block their deal. We'll bring you the details and the trades next. Welcome back to Fast Money. A pair of healthcare stocks taking a hit today. Horizon Therapeutics nosediving after, more than 14% after the Federal Trade Commission sued to block its acquisition by Amgen. The commission citing a lack of competition and monopoly concerns pertaining to two of Horizon's drugs. Amgen intends to challenge the objections in court in order to complete the nearly $28 billion deal by the end of the year. Guy.
I thought this one was a foregone conclusion. So this clearly came out of nowhere. If you look at the way the stocks traded, stock market's telling you that as well. Amgen said they're going to mount a vigorous defense. I'm probably paraphrasing, but it's effectively what's going to happen. And I think they'll wind up getting it done. I'm not really sure what the objections are. With that said, Amgen's just too cheap here. If you look at a chart, we're trading to levels that we basically have had found support a number of times. So Amgen on valuation, yes. And Horizon, I think, it's just got whacked too much as well. I think Horizon's worth a look as well. This deal, I think, is going to get done one way, shape, or form.
All right. Today's news sending Horizon's options into overdrive. Maiko's got the details on one huge bet against the pharma name. Mike.
Yeah, we saw over three times the average daily options volume in this. And the most active options were the January 2024 85 strike puts. We saw a block of 10,000 of those trade for $10.75. Two more blocks of 5,000 apiece traded for a similar price within minutes, and ultimately nearly 35,000 of them traded all day. This represents some of the highest premium I've ever seen spent on a single options trade. And my guess is what's going on is that people who are long the stock or may have purchased more of it, betting, as Guy said, that the deal's going to go through, or deciding to hedge their bets.
All right, Mike, thanks for that. Mike Coe, for more options action, tune into the full show. That's Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Coming up, David Faber's exclusive interview with Elon Musk is just moments away. So what would our traders ask Elon? Stick around. We'll break that down right after this. We are just minutes away from David Faber's exclusive one-on-one interview with Tesla CEO Elon Musk, the company's annual shareholder meeting just wrapping up. So as we get ready for that big interview, let's go around the horn and find out the one question our traders would be asking Elon Musk. But let's start with Gene Munster. Gene, what would you ask?
Melissa, I would ask if we're going to see a punch-through moment related to FSD. That was one of the continued themes of the whole shareholder meeting. He is pounding the table on FSD. We've heard that for years. But just like we saw ChatGPT punch through in AI that companies have been working on for years, will we see a similar type of breakthrough moment when it comes to autonomy?
Breakthrough moment, meaning like the stock pops on the back of FSD specifically? What does punch through?
No, just from a technology standpoint, okay. Essentially that the models get to a point where this becomes a reality, and then it's just everywhere, just like ChatGPT.
Right. Gene, thanks. Gene Munster.
Thank you.
All right. Tim, what would you ask?
I would ask him if he's bothered by corporate governance, because it's clear that he's been bothered by corporate governance his whole career. He's paid no attention to it. You know, that some of these board elections, even today, J.B. Straubel, I mean, replacing the Japanese pension fund doesn't seem like a good trade for investors. So that's my question. How do you feel about corporate governance? Do you believe in it?
The most important pressing thing for investors is margins. I would rather figure that out, back end into that, and say, what do you feel on pricing? I have to know his thought process on whether he's lowering, raising, how deep is he going to go on that, and then I could figure out the margins out of that.
Guy.
Is there a scenario with the Twitter valuation where you would be forced to sell more Tesla stock, and what is that scenario?
That is a very interesting question, and that has been part of your bear case on Tesla.
Yeah, I mean, my case is that the Twitter is a huge overhang for Tesla. But the question I would have is, like, we can give credit where credit's due. He's done amazing things for pushing forward the development of EVs and the whole industry globally, okay? And look what he's done with SpaceX, okay? Like, so why not spend all of your time on SpaceX? You're like the space guy, you know what I mean? Like, you drop the mic on Tesla, drop the mic on Twitter, drop the mic on Neuralink, and do the thing that would be so impactful for the planet.
I think that his answer would be he can do it all.
But I would say my answer to him, or my pushback, might be it doesn't appear right now over the last year you're doing a great job
but
with
why?
All of them.
I mean,
SpaceX
just had
a major victory. I mean, you know, I do think that, look, and I'm not going to argue he's doing a great job at any of these places because I'm not going to, it's all relative. I mean, he's got people working at these companies that are doing what they're doing. There's been a real argument about distraction at Tesla for Twitter. So I agree with that. SpaceX, I think right now, again, for a private company that we don't have a lot of information about, the progress there seems extraordinary.
To your point, though, I mean, for the next year, the question is if it's going to be tough for at least the next 12 months, which is what he predicts himself, then what does that mean for the stock? And if all these other companies go bankrupt, some of the others, does that mean that investor money, it's sort of the ATM effect, go to Tesla, which is actually a good thing for the stock?
I think part of what he said is exactly that. If you can sort of get to the other side of this, we will be in a much better position, given what I think is going to happen over the next year where things are going to be rough. We will be the one that wins on the other side. What happens between here and then, though? That's the real question.
Time for the final trade. Let's go around the horn. Tim Seymour.
Conversation gold came up, GDX. I think that 33 level is a level you can be start nibbling on this. I think gold is going significantly higher over the next 6 to 9 months.
Steve.
I think Elon Musk always tempers his opinion on what the overall economy is going to do. He's somewhat similar to a Jamie Dimon. So I think he's setting the bar real low for himself. I'm going to go with Tesla for the final trade.
Dan.
Despite guys' unusual optimism about the McCarthy-Biden meeting, I think you could be long some VIX calls here. I think that this is going to go down for them.
Is it sarcastic?
A little bit.
Yeah. Guy.
Mets raise this evening.
Oh, how about that? What's your prediction?
Biggs. My prediction is pain.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Mr. T, I heard that before.
We talked about oven mitts earlier, which yes, provided me with, actually, you've been coughing ever since.
I know.
Williams Sonoma, too cheap at these levels.
So funny your Dutch joke oven. Is, that's yeah. why. Thank you for watching Fast Money. Do not go anywhere. David Faber's sit-down interview with Elon Musk is just moments away. We've got live coverage right after this quick break.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Fast Money Disclaimer.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.